let's do a little bit of the beginning of the parsha and give a little bit the Hasidic perspective a little bit on it. And of course, the parsha begins with the word Vaschanan we're doing today. So that's the second parsha. By the way, this is also called the Shabbos. Is also called the Shabbos Nachamu, the Shabbos of comfort. And there are 3 weeks that come before Tisha B'Av. They are called the 3 weeks of punishment, sort of. And the Haftorah we read are words of rebuke. Starting with this week, after Tisha B'Av, we have 7 weeks that follow with comfort. So this is the first week where Hashem starts, the Haftorah begins with Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, comforted, comforted my people. And in a way also we have coming up, we have the 15th day of Av, to be Av. That is not such a known holiday. We don't do like any major activities, but we don't see Tachamun. And one of the beautiful things is that a lot of marriages took place on the 15th day of Av. The Talmud has a whole piece on there, how, you know, the young men would pick their brides and they would all rejoice. The Talmud says, as far, says there were no great holidays, nothing like Tisha B'Av, like the 15th day of Av. I guess the happiness and the joy that took place for making all these new homes together and the marriages that took place over there. So this was a very special holiday. So, and you know, as it's understood, is because it comes after such a downtime. Once it's on downtime, so then the highlight of it was is celebrated. You see, the 15th of the month, right, by the Jewish people is always considered to be sort of the highlight of the month, because it's when the moon is a full moon. So that's why Sukkot, Pesach, they're all on the 15th of the month. And Av, especially because it was so down, so the 15th of Av is the Nachamu, it's sort of the Nachamu. That's another aspect of this comfort. And, but today, you know, we'll concentrate on the beginning words of the parsha. So basically, Moshe Rabbeinu was pleading to go into Eretz Yisrael. And, you know, as a side point, you know, I was just discussed once before, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu actually puts the blame on the Jewish people. Because when it came to the rock, instead of talking, he hit it because the Jews were bothering him and they were annoying him and they were complaining. So I guess he made a mistake and he hit the rock. But it's a little surprising.
Didn't his sister just die? Didn't he just lose his sister?
Sister and brother too.
And brother too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So no, actually that was before. That was after he lost his sister. That's true. Before his brother died. But because Aaron was there with him. Actually, Aaron was punished together with Moshe for, because
right.
He was considered also a participant in the what
right.
Moshe did. But a side question that I was, you know, thinking about, and I gave the class a long time ago. Somebody asked me the question, and then, you know, I thought of an idea, and I, you know, it sounds, you know, listen to it, it sounds a pretty good idea, and maybe, you know, it's one idea. So. Seems a little bit out of character for Moshe Rabbeinu to blame the Jews. You know, he's saying, like, he didn't accept responsibility. He says, it's because of you, and you made me do this, you know, and that's because of you. And so one possible way of saying this is, actually, why did Moshe Rabbeinu get punished, like, so severely not to go into Eretz Yisrael? So he made a mistake. So Rashi actually asks on the And the Chumash Rashi asks, Moshe Rabbeinu was questioning Hashem, and you know, how could Hashem have enough to feed all the people there? So Rashi says that seems to be a more severe sort of kind of doubting God's ability, more than just hitting the rock instead of talking to it. How come over there God didn't punish him, but here he punished him? So Rashi explains that that conversation, his doubting Hashem, was between him and God. So that was a private, that was a personal thing. So Hashem sort of covered, the verse covered for him. Hashem covered for him. But this was in the public, and he had an opportunity to make a Kiddush Hashem. He could have sanctified Hashem's name by everybody who would say, look, you don't have to beat up on the rock in order for it to listen. You can just speak to it. He missed an opportunity. So because he missed the opportunity and it was public, Hashem can't cover for that. So it's, so perhaps when he's saying that because of you, he's not putting blame on them. He's saying because of you, meaning because it was a public thing. Wow. Not to say that somebody else is guilty, but just to say it's because of you that there was other people there, so Hashem could not forgive me. Not, it's not sort of blaming, but just sort of explaining. And what he meant to say is how much more a person needs to be careful when there's other people around. And when you might, some people might misconstrue what you're saying or what you're doing. And, you know, there's, it's very important to make sure, not so much, you know, what you do yourself, but also that people shouldn't learn and make mistakes. That help. Yeah, go ahead.
In the last chapter,
right?
Devarim, Moshe actually blamed it on the people and said, because you, when we had the spy situation, because of that,
yeah,
I'm not going to be able to go in, because, you know, you said, you know, you didn't want to go in, and so because of that, I'm not going to be able to go. It wasn't even about the rock. He was blaming that.
Well, he actually, I don't want to see exactly the language you're using, but it says quite clearly that Moshe Rabbeinu was not punished, in Rashi says, because of all the other Jews. Matter of fact, Rashi says in one place that every time it says about Moshe Rabbeinu not going into Israel, it always gives the reason. It says because you spoke, you beat the rock instead of it. It doesn't say why. Because, you know, Rashi gives an example. There were time two sisters, and one of them, you know, did like a small something wrong, and the other one did something terrible. So it was like very clearly made that this sister did something very small, so people shouldn't think they did something as bad as the other one. So it's not the miraglim, and it's not because of the spies.
He blamed them.
But that's not the reason that he couldn't. He blamed them. He said that that's where they stayed in Israel, but that's not, he didn't blame them for not him going into Israel because of that. Unless you want me to take a look at the verse. Yeah. Back to our subject matter over here that we're talking about. So Moshe Rabbeinu is basically begging Hashem. And, you know, Torah has many layers. And the thing is, sometimes if you only have one layer, then, you know, certain things are not so clear. But the Torah, if you go dig a little deeper, and you use some of the words as a hint, you know, we have gematria, we have the numerical value, we have meanings of words that could mean two things. And that's why also it's very important, if you can, is to go to the Hebrew text, because a lot of times the way it's translated doesn't really fully do justice to the translation. I know we do on Shabbos afternoon, we always do Pirkei Avos, and the people read from the English translation, and then we had somebody who reads Russian, he was reading from his Russian translation, he told it to us in English, and the meaning came out totally different.
Yeah,
everybody's translation said something totally different,
yeah,
and we're discussing. So when you do a translation, it's hard. So something, but when you have the words, it's a lot more meaningful, because you can really understand the words. But basically, he says to Hashem, he was begging Hashem to let him go into Israel. He prayed 115 prayers to Hashem to let him go into Israel. And what is his prayer that we read, that he prays? It says, Ata hachiloso, you began you have begun to show your servant. Rashi explains it, the simple meaning, because they already had the war there with Sichon and Og, Melech Amori. They waged war and they won it, and were giving it as an inheritance to the 2.5 tribes that took there on that side of the Jordan River. So Moshe Rabbeinu was basically saying, Rashi, there's also a couple of interpretations, but basically saying, well, this is already the starting of the conquering of Israel, since I already I began to witness the inheritance of the land, that you've shown your great miracles, so let me in. I want to go over on the other side. I want to see the land. He's asking to see the land. And, you know, Rebbe doesn't ask it over here, but we also need to understand, what is it, why was Moshe Rabbeinu so insistent? I'm going to see the land. Okay, I mean, it seems like Shem says, don't go into the land. Yeshua will bring him to the land. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu? But the Rebbe doesn't either.
His whole life. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Hashem says you don't go, you accept it. You know, I mean, Hashem says you don't go, you don't go. You know, a lot of people, you know, they would like certain things, but this is what they're... Why did he insist he wanted to go? Something, there's something more than just, you know, wanted to go to Israel. Something to do the mitzvahs in the land of Israel. Some mitzvahs you can only do in Israel. But there's also a spiritual part to this, a layer, which is actually in our way of service of Hashem. Why do we read about all this? Just a story about what took place by Moshe Rabbeinu, and took place a long time ago, something that he prayed for and he didn't achieve. But what does it mean to us? You know, how does it...
How do we carry on what Moshe wanted? We are now carrying on.
To actually go on?
To go to the land, to do mitzvahs with Moshe.
With Moshe.
You know, carry on, I'm trying to listen.
Yeah, good. No. These are all good ideas. But you have to connect it.
From an idea.
Great. No.
I was thinking it's to learn that sometimes Hashem doesn't answer our pleas, at least overtly.
Yeah, okay. Okay, that's a message. But what did he mean? Okay, Rebbe asks over here. Rebbe starts talking. What did it mean in the simple? It says you began. In other words, it says Hashem says you, ato hachiloiso laharisis avdecho, you have started to show your son your great hand and your mighty hand. You know who's like you in the heavens and the earth. Well, this wasn't, first of all, why is that called the beginning? I mean, they were already 40 years in the desert. They were Egypt. There were so many things going on. There was the splitting of the sea, there was the exodus of Egypt, Matan Torah, war with Amalek, there were so many things that are going on. He says, oh, you began. And how do we apply it into the in the service of Hashem also? So, the Rebbe explains like this, that the way normally Hashem originally created the world in a way out of His kindness. In other words, Hashem created the world. We didn't. There was nothing. There were no human beings. There was no Bnei Yisrael. There was no Yidden there. So there was nobody there to basically elicit or to get the spirituality into this world. There's nobody to bring it, because Hashem created the world from His own, and then He created people into this world, or more specifically, He created the Bnei Yisrael in this world. What is the idea over here? Hashem created a world in which it's dark. Basically, a world in which we don't see openly Hashem's presence. And when we say a world, we can talk about the world. People don't see God. But maybe we talk about our own little world. You know, we have a little world in which, you know, we're confused and we're preoccupied with everything else, and we don't necessarily see Hashem in our lives, in our place. So, what does Hashem want? Hashem wants us to open ourselves up and reveal Hashem in the world and revealed Hashem in our neshama. So Hashem gave us a neshama, gave us a soul. The soul is comes very high. And he put it into a body, into an animal soul, into something which is covered in disguise. And he wants that soul to sort of shine through, break through the cover. And for a person to start to feel Hashem. Now, how do we start to feel Hashem? What do? We have to do, we have to work hard. It says, Hashem placed the Adam in the Gan Eden to work and to guard it. What does it mean? We have the mitzvahs. In other words, we have mitzvahs. We have 248 positive mitzvahs. We have 365 prohibitions. That means la'avda, to work it, to serve it, to make sure to bring down the light, and to protect it. So just like a field, you want to make sure to work the field so it grows well. You also want to keep away all damaging things, and to make sure that it's protected. So, the same thing is, every time we do a mitzvah, the Eibishter gave us the means of the mitzvah, that is called, in the Kabbalah, it's called Isaruso Diletato. That's in the Razzle below. When we do something, that's our work. Isaruso literally means an arousal. It means an arousal from below, which means the way most of Hashem's energies, the way it comes out, it's tit for tat. Basically, we say, Shuvah Eli v'ashuvah Lechem. Hashem says, you turn to me, and then I'll turn to you. So we have to sort of turn to Hashem, and then we get Hashem back. How do we turn to Hashem? What is the channels? How do we pull Hashem? How do we ask Hashem? So in the beginning, Hashem created out of His kindness, but now Hashem is hidden from the world. He's not openly revealed in the world. So, when every time we do a mitzvah, we're bringing down the revelation to the world. Now, the revelation of the world, again, means to ourselves. It brings us a little bit of holiness. We do a mitzvah, it brings down a holy energy, it brings down a holy spiritual connection to Hashem. Every mitzvah is sarusa deletata, it's an arousal from below, which elicits later on Isarusa de la'ila. Now, and basically, all these mitzvahs that we do, it's like make the world a brighter place. Because each soul and each person that does the mitzvahs, this is like, it's like you have a dark room. The more candles you light, you get more light. So then, the more people there are doing mitzvahs, the more light. So each one's light, their own light and their own section, what they're doing brings down more light. And that's the way we start over ourselves. Everybody brings down Hashem in their own heart, in their own place, in their own mind. And then if we cumulative total, everybody together, we are bringing down the level of Hashem. But that's in the very simple level, we're saying we do a mitzvah, every mitzvah brings down a very high level energy, light, life force from Hashem, which gives some illumination. That's why we say, a little bit, every mitzvah is like a little candle, is like a little light. And when you have a dark world, when there's so much negativity, so these lights keep on bring back the light of Hashem into the world. Hashem wants us to bring His presence, His light into the world. But that seems very simple, very simplistic. We do a mitzvah, we draw down the light. But what is it that gives us, how do we have the strength that when we do a mitzvah, we can actually bring down? We're doing a very physical act, we're doing a mitzvah, and that mitzvah brings down who gives us the energy that our power, that our arousal will bring down Hashem.
The mitzvah maybe gives it to us.
That's correct. But who gives that mitzvah? But who's doing it? We're doing the mitzvah. So he explains over here that there is an Isaruso de la'ela which comes before Isaruso de la'tata, which means, and if you want to take this in a different example, not so about mitzvahs, sometimes we get just a call from above, you know, it's an awakening. We don't even know where it comes from. It's not, you see, here we're talking about we have to turn to Hashem, so Hashem will turn to us. But how do we make the first move? Who's the one that makes the first move? How do we even want to turn to Hashem? So there is a level which is even higher, which comes from above, is Rusa Delayla. As for example, we know in the Mishnah, we say, like, there's voices coming out from the heavens that speak about learning Torah, that speak about a baskol. It's called a baskol, a daughter of a voice. It's not a voice, but so the question is, what is it doing? Nobody hears it. We don't hear it. We don't see it. But the soul hears it. Baskol, so it means sometimes there's an energy that comes in a super conscious level. It's not something that we can actually know. We don't know. All of a sudden we have an awakening, you know, that we didn't prepare ourselves. We didn't work at it. The Rebbe explains, like, that's sort of the idea of the bracha we do before the mitzvah. So we have a mitzvah, and then before we do a mitzvah, we make a bracha. The bracha of the mitzvah is sort of giving us, we're saying with the bracha, we're saying, Baruch Ato Hashem. What we're saying with the bracha is, Hashem, give us the power that when we will do the mitzvah, that this mitzvah should actually be able to elicit and bring down the energy that follows it. So we're making a bracha before the mitzvah. That's why it's very important. Halacha says, for example, that whenever you do a mitzvah, you make the bracha before you do the mitzvah. You never do the mitzvah and then say the bracha. The only exception would be, and there's a special reason for that. And the truth of the matter is, can lighting a Friday night? Because the problem is, if you made the bracha first, then you already accepted Shabbos, then you cannot go and light the candles, because it's Shabbos already. But the mitzvah over there is to enjoy the light. That's why you cover your eyes. You know, that's the reason why you cover your eyes. You cover your eyes when you make the bracha, so that you will enjoy the light as soon as you uncover your hands from your eyes. So that means that the bracha that you made for lighting of the candles is before your enjoyment. So there too, it's after the lighting, but it's still before you're enjoying the light of the candle. But here it makes a lot of sense now. We understand why the bracha has to be done before, because the bracha is actually the energy that allows us for the mitzvah to have its impact. So that our mitzvah should be a proper mitzvah, we need to have that Hashem gives us the energy. So even things that we accomplish, we only accomplish this with the help of Hashem. I'm not sure if I gave the example last week, I'm not sure, but like there's once I'll give us an example that there was a father, you know, his son, you know, summer, he didn't have what to do with him in the summer. So looking for a place, so he goes over to the camp director and he says to the camp director, I need a place for my son. Would you take him in the camp? He says, you know, I'm full. I don't have any place for him. And the father says, I don't have what to do with my son. He's going to be roaming the streets all day. You know what? He says, I'll tell you what. You take my son and you pretend I'll pay you the money. You pay him the money and he'll work for you. Let him feel good about himself. He thinks, and the kid got a job. He was working very well, got very well paid because the father paid the director a lot. He was going around and bragging and saying, oh, I'm doing such a good job. I'm getting so well paid. But little did he know who's doing it all for him. His father is telling the director to do it. I mean, we in this world think, oh, we're so smart. We don't know that the father, Hashem, sort of, he's the one that is orchestrating and he's the one that is making all these different things happen. So to us, it looks like, if it's too cold, we can close the air conditioner. It's like that kid, you know. His father is giving him everything. His father persuaded the director, but he thinks, he takes himself credit, and he thinks that, you know, I'm doing the job. I'm getting the money and I'm working and I get all the credit. We all think of ourselves that we're getting the credit. Little do we know that Hashem is creating all these tools for us and making sure that we're coming from Hashem. So, in this context, the person has to have realize that even the ability that he has to do a mitzvah, that he has an incentive to do a mitzvah, or that he'll carry through with the mitzvah, somebody gives him that power. So even before your own investment, before your own work, somebody has given you that opportunity, that ability, so that you can actually go ahead and do so. And you have to recognize that that comes from Hashem. Somebody is there watching over you and taking care of you. And that's the Isarusa de la Eila that comes before the Isarusa de la Tata. Now, that is something which is almost subconscious. Or that is something which is called, sometimes you see something, but you can't explain it. Sometimes you know something, you feel it. You feel it in your bones, you know that it's true, and you know that it is, but it's not rational. It's not, you know, you can't get it. It's sometimes there is things that are above your seichel. It's above your intellect. It's not something that you can rationally really see, take it. That's what we would call the level of ri'iyo. That is called the level of seeing. Seeing is believing. Seeing something means, it says, like, for example, the Ari HaKadosh, the Holy Ari Zal. It says that one time, his student came in, he woke up from his sleep, and woke him up, or he got up from his sleep, and he told his student, I just saw interpretation on the verses of the portion of Balak and Bilam. We read it. It would take me 80 consecutive years to speak and say everything that I saw in these 2 hours that it was a Shabbos afternoon nap. So the Rebbe says, how could that possibly be? To 80 years to talk, how could you see that in 2 years? But it's a different kind of vision. It's not a comprehended vision. It's something which you get with Re'iyah. That's above. That means when Hashem talks to us that way, when Hashem talks to our subconscious, He talks to us a level of Re'iyah. Moshe Rabbeinu, he had that level. He had that level of seeing Hashem. He saw Hashem. And therefore, you know, there's two interpretations, back a little bit to the interpretation of the verse. What does it mean, va'et chanan?
He implored.
Implored. But et chanan also comes from the root chinam. He asked Hashem, give me a free gift. Matnat chinam. He also said to Hashem, I don't deserve it. The Gemara says that even though tzaddikim have, you know, a lot of good deeds, they can say, Hashem, you owe it to me because I've been of service to you all the life. So Moshe Rabbeinu could have said to Hashem, I was there for your people all through life, I deserve it. No, but tzaddikim don't ask, that they don't demand.
Or for themselves.
What?
For themselves?
Yeah. No, but they say as a free gift. Matnas chinam.
Is chinam like a
habas chinam? Yeah. Chinam means for no, I don't deserve it. Just give it to me anyways. Yeah. Which is the way that we should always pray. We should never ask Hashem. Because if we start asking Hashem because we deserve it, we may not reach too far. You know, so we always ask Hashem to give us as a free gift. What is this really telling us? Moshe Rabbeinu's level was a level which was like a free gift, which means was a level which it's not the Isarusa de la Tata that can implore, can elicit. It's like something free. It's like the gift that Hashem gives you. It's a it's a relationship with Hashem. It's a vision. And he says to Hashem, he says the verse, Ata hachiloisa. He says, you are the one that started it. In other words, it didn't come from Isaruso Diletato. It's not me that started it, and I got the Isaruso Dilela. Ata hachiloisa. You are the one that started it. Laharois, to show, as avdecho, your servant. In other words, it comes from you. He says, Hashem, I want to give that level that I have a recognition. I want to bring it into the land. In this concept, land is, I want to share it with the people. I want the land, meaning the people, to Knesset Yisrael, which is called the land. This is Malchus. I want them also to have that level of recognition in Hashem. And this is precisely what the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, what they instituted the bracha. They too wanted the bracha, they wanted to give a level, infuse the people with such a level of connection to Hashem, which is beyond what they can elicit through their work. It's a connection, it's something which is a gift, which is Hashem's gift. What he wanted to give, that everybody should have that gift. Now, he says, I was begging for Hashem. Now, it turned out that Hashem, it wasn't meant to be, because in the future, La'asid Lavo, when Mashiach will come, and the world will be in a purified state, so then our vision in godliness will be on the highest of levels. Then we will be able to see. And the Kabbalah, it talks about the various different levels, the world of chaos, higher the world of chaos, the world of Atika, and the world of Atzilus, the various different levels. But now we don't have that level yet of revelation. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that it's going to be next year because it's 2020 vision.
Great.
So next year?
Yeah, good. Emet Hashem, excellent.
Sorry to interrupt
you. No, that's great. Good. I go for that. That's okay. But
he's
going to
use it.
Yeah.
Good.
I can use it. Okay, I got permission. It won't be plagiarism. The thing is that
this vision, this that Moshe had, he's saying it's a matana that the Eibishter gave him.
Gave to Moshe. That was his level.
So Hashem could give this vision to everybody.
But it's not. That's not yet for everybody. That will come to everybody in a later time.
You have to be open. He wanted to. That level to be open.
Yeah.
For,
yeah.
Right?
And what happens is actually, we daven, and while we daven, one is expected. The Alter Rebbe expects the person while he davens, to get involved in the davening and to really reflect and meditate. And relatively speaking, there is various different levels that one reaches. So first you start off with a level of understanding, but then you get sometimes an insight over there, comes maybe later, but then you get sort of, you just feel it goes straight through your bones. You know, you actually feel something from above that is there, which is a light that you feel that you can't even sense and you can't even explain, or it's not rational. Mm-hmm. But so what happens now? The truth of the matter is we do have it now, but it's some places in Chassidus, it gives the example, it's like you have a treasure in a box. So let's say you have $1 million sitting in the bank. So you're going to say, in the olden days they didn't have the bank, so they kept it, the Maltrevi is an example, it's sitting in a treasure, you have the, it's closed in the box, it's locked away, it's put away somewhere. Just because you don't have the right there in front of you doesn't mean that you don't have it, you own it. He says the same example is, we actually get a certain level of that level of we get it now too. It's in a safe deposit now. It's not there. We will get it. It will come to us. It's whatever we worked over here, that comes together with it. That's the level that we get, you know, when we do our avodah, when we do our service of Hashem. And the Rebbe goes through the Alter goes through various different things, that it is sometimes the connection, I guess, with a Rebbe, with the rabbis. The rabbis are called the eyes of the community. Moshe Rabbeinu is also called, he says, let me see, the eye. Why are they the eyes of the community? Because they are supposed to be on a higher level. They are the eyes, they can see things maybe that the ordinary folks cannot see. They are on a higher level. And these connection to the eye, the error, that is what brings down to the people, to at least to that extent. And we see that, you know, in reality, a lot of times, you know, you have people who are maybe totally not religious or have no idea, and then all of a sudden they have some awakening or something in them, you know, the calls for that. And that's called that level of Riya, which is subconscious, which comes to their neshama and works its way through until it changes around. But unfortunately, Moshe Rabbeinu did not succeed in the very literal level, but he did succeed in the general level. And each person has to take his own Moshe Rabbeinu in himself and try to give himself that free gift, you know, himself, to be able to feel that connection to Hashem. When you feel with that connection to Hashem, then everything else you do becomes a lot more enthusiastic and more clear. You know, they say that when you see something, then nobody can challenge that. In other words, if you've seen something with your own eyes, then it's you're convinced. It's your conviction to it. So when people see Hashem or they see godliness, then now, you know, the heretic may laugh at it and he may say, "What do you know? How do you believe?" And he has all the questions that he wants. But if you've seen it, then questions won't deter you, because then you just know that it's there through a deeper sense, not through the sense of the intellect. And that's the connection with that.
He was asking Be'ezchan, he's asking for something for him.
To bring to the people. That was his request. He wanted to bring it down. Which is really, that's the meaning when we say, like, Baruch Hashem. What is Baruch Hashem, we always say? Baruch means blessed is Hashem. So we're blessing Hashem. But Baruch Hashem also means bring down Hashem. It's very interesting. Like, we find the Talmud says, like, a very strange thing, that it was Yishmoel Kohen Gadol. He asked the high priest, he went in a Yom Kippur. He went into the Kodesh Kodashim, the Holy of Holiest, and he saw the divine over there. He saw Hashem, and Hashem says to him, "Bench me, bless me, Borcheni." What does it mean? What does it mean? God says to him, "Bless me." God says to him, "Borcheni" means bring me down. Hashem wants us to bring him down. When we say Baruch Hashem, we say Baruch Shomar V'Hoyah Olam, Baruch Hu, Baruch Haimer V'Yisrael. We do all the Baruchs. What does it mean? Baruch means drawing down. Baruch Hashem min ha'olam ve'ad ha'olam. Bring Hashem down from the hidden world to the open world. Bring Hashem down. That's what the intention. That's what all the brachas. That's why the first bracha is that what we do. We say Baruch Hashem Baruch before we make the bracha. We say Baruch Ato Hashem. Ato means you, the Hashem. So these are all verses, all things that tell us that we have to bring down Hashem into this world, and this is the job of a yid, and that's the job of all the lights that we bring down to the world. And of course, together with that comes also the studies of the Torah. Torah, in a way, represents a higher level than prayer. Prayer is what we elicit and we bring down. Because Torah, in a way, is just Hashem's Torah that we're learning. So it's more, it's a higher connection. It's sort of, Torah is Hashem himself giving it to us versus we are asking Hashem. Prayer is, we're asking Hashem, you know, heal us, bless us, do for us, and then Hashem brings down. The Torah we're bringing down, right? We say, the Pasuk says, Korev Hashem is close, to all that call him, all that call him with emes, with truth. Emes is truth with Torah. If you real closeness to Hashem, you get it through the connection of Torah. Torah is the sort of is that light which comes from the higher level. Explains it with various different levels, various marshals over here, and the rest of us, Yeshua and the Jewish people. They have to go into the land, they do the mitzvahs, you know, they have to work hard, and then they elicit, and they don't have openly that high level. All right, that's a little bit from the Maimer
of the Ketuvot Torah in the beginning.
So, so